the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers Arizona Cardinals. Seth Cox is on the line, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and he's also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast, which is particularly pertinent right now as we are going through the draft process, and this is another one of the final of our draft preview shows in terms of players and positions. It's episode 418, but it's not only that. We get to talk about uniforms, which, you know, 46-year-old me, I'm like, uniforms. But I know, uniforms are a big deal to young people, middle-aged people as well, players, uniforms matter.
The players are the big ones.
And so we have new uniforms that happened tonight, recording Thursday night. And Thursday night, the Cardinals had their event in Phoenix at the Van Buren. Season ticket holders were invited. Media members were invited. I considered going, except we had the show to do. So I figured I'll just look at Twitter and then we can talk about it. We've got new uniforms, and then we've got the last of our positional previews. We're going to talk about the running backs in this draft, the tight ends, and we're not going to talk about all the quarterbacks because the Cardinals are not going to be taking a quarterback early in the draft, but we'll look at perhaps some late-round guys the Cardinals might consider moving forward because you always want to bring quarterbacks in to develop. That's kind of one of the commodities that you need in this league. So let's start. We have new uniforms, which, honestly, my biggest takeaway is they didn't mess them up, because that's the one thing. People have been begging for new uniforms, and we've seen other teams do uniforms, and they're like, ew. They're apparently simple, but they're nice. And they didn't mess things up, basically. They didn't try to do too much with them. And I think the fact that this is a team that is slow to do things historically, and they try to tie things in historically, then I think it was a smart move to do. So it's really basic. They have three. They've got a white scheme, they've got a red scheme, and they've got a black scheme. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and, you know, the more I read, the more things make sense. And you know, so like the Reds on first initial reaction, wasn't a huge fan. But if you go dive a little deeper in, you learn that they went with the plain reds, no striping, based on their St. Louis uniforms. So if you go back and look at old St. Louis uniforms, that's what the reds looked like. But they wanted to make sure that everybody knew it was Arizona, right? So they put the bigger, and that's a Nike thing too. I think people need to understand that Nike does have a part in this. And you know, this is their concept, is that they like to show off, they like to show off the state. So like the Jets' new uniforms have the big, I think it's NYJ on the front, or it might just say New York. I'm not,
And honestly, I like the concept. My son, as those of you who, if you know, like, I have a 21-year-old son, Diego, big in football fan. He's studying sports business. He might end up working for an NFL team at some point. But he's part of that generation that loves uniform concepts. That kind of goes over my head, but he was questioning, well, why is the Arizona only on the red? I'm like, because it's their home uniform. That's when they're playing in Arizona. And it gives each uniform, each style, the white, the red, the black, all have something slightly different. And I kind of like that. I do.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I'm big on clean uniforms. And so, like, that's what these are. These are clean. They didn't go over the top. They didn't try to do too much, and that's the way I like it. We had heard rumors that the whites and blacks would give us Ohio State vibes. They do, but yeah, not in a negative way, right?
Right. It's more of kind of the, for me, it's the sleeve design, the stripes that they have on the sleeves that give me that feel more than anything.
Right, right. And so, and then the Reds, you know, they do have similarities to like Oklahoma, but those are, you know, those are classic uniforms, like some of the most classic uniforms in all of college football.
Yeah.
They're a little brighter red. So I think, you know, people are going to say, oh, they did, you know, didn't do enough. They did too much, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, it's a clean look. It's a super upgrade from what they had. And I, you know, it was funny. We were texting while they were coming out in them, and I told you my favorite were the whites. Your favorites were the black. And then one of our good friends, Tyler Nickel, was texting me and goes, my favorites are the reds. So that's what, and so that's what I was saying to people. Like, it's funny because realistically, nobody's gonna like all three. Like, nobody's gonna love all three, I should say.
Right.
But the fact that everybody I've talked to is like, oh, I like at least this one, then they did it right. Because, like, there's one for you to choose from if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, and that's all you need to worry about. Like, you're not going to go buy three jerseys. So you buy the one you like.
We aren't made of money, guys. This podcast is not a rich podcast.
Right.
But, you know, if I were to rank mine, I love the black. I've loved the black alternates. I really like the red. And it's not like I dislike the white. It's just, for me, white uniforms are pretty, I've never loved plain whites. In fact, as an Arizona State fan, of all the different uniform concepts they had, the white is my least favorite. But that's a me thing. I know that lots of people, including players, love a really clean white uniform. And it does look good. It's just not my preferred thing. There's one thing I've had a complaint about. So, my opinion on jerseys and uniforms is as little as that there is when it came to their black alternates, the first black alternate, I love that look, especially in person. But there was just little tiny lines of red that wasn't visible at all when you watched the players on TV. And so it gave me a vibe like the Cardinals were playing in black and white and everyone else was playing in color. But they're very visible and things like that. Then the Color Rush jerseys came out, and I love how those look. But then for a functional part of it, they've got the red numbering, which I loved. But part of the job of the reporter is sitting in the press box. I can't see the numbers very well because they don't have any outline. The white numbering against the black on the original black alternates, very easy to read, but the red on black without any outlining was hard. And they made that improvement on the alternate blacks this time. And so you've got the red numbering, which I loved from the Color Rush, but they then put, it's what I guess is a silverish outline. It looked white initially when I was looking on my phone, but I guess more close, it's kind of a gray silver outline to those numberings, which makes the numbers pop to me, and legible, so that, you know, when I'm doing things like charting who's playing, who's making the play, who's on the offense, defensive line, I can tell who that is.
Yeah, and I really like, you know, like I said, the whites are my favorite. They're clean, they're crisp. That's how I like my uniforms. I like the lettering. I like, you know, all of that. It's just a clean look. The blacks and look are, you know, like, if you were to ask me, I'd be like A+ for the whites, you know, A-, B+ for the blacks. And I'd give the reds a C for right now. I'm not a huge fan of just the all red. It's just a little red for me. We saw a mashup concept that somebody much smarter and more talented with computer stuff did on Twitter. And the reds with the white pants look fire. Like, they look awesome. So if they come out in those more consistently, I'll like the reds more. The all red is just a lot of red.
It is, like, a lot of red. You know, and I kind of wish that the NFL would allow them to do something like this, but kind of like how ASU mixes and matches. Imagine this. Imagine the black helmet with the white top and the black pants. I think that would be so nice.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, you know, they did a nice job. They did a really nice job of just, like, giving themselves a new look.
And there's some hidden things. So, you know, for those of you, like, the hashtag last year, Bird City Football. Okay, I'll get this. When people talked about how people said that Phoenix was Bird City, I'll go with you, Seth. I've lived here my entire life. You know what I've never heard Phoenix referred to as is Bird City. Had you ever heard that before this year?
No.
So the idea people were trying to force this Bird City, I'm like, nobody calls Phoenix the Bird City. Yes, a Phoenix is a mythical bird. Nobody says that. But, and Cardinals fans, you know, over the last decade that we've kind of been in the sports media game, the hashtag Bird Gang was the one that Cardinals fans really latched to. And they are readopting that. There's some neat hidden messages in the insides of the jerseys. They've got Protect the Nest. They've got Bird Gang. I really like those concepts. That's for the artsy part of jerseys.
And I do like the back. I didn't notice it until later on, but the back above the numbers, they have the logo as well.
Yeah. Oh, on the red where they have that, the white bird. That's cool.
Yeah, it looks, yeah, that's what I was saying. It looks really nice. And then, you know, I like the Cardinals in the silver. I know people are like silver, but like, I like the Cardinals in the silver on the sleeves. I think those look good. So like the whole thing, like I said, I'm a fan. You know, you go back, go to the Arizona Cardinals Twitter account at AZ Cardinals. You know, they go through all of it, but like, the upper back logo in the black is a straight red bird. Like, it looks fantastic. You know, the white one has the more normal looking cardinal with the yellow beak, which looks great. And then, like you said, the red one has the all white. So like, they did something different in each of them too. Like little things that you may not have noticed, but like, having the, you know, obviously the team's logo, but all colored differently in every single jersey. That's like, that's something that's a unique and cool thing that they did.
The gray face mask is a nice addition to the helmet. The decal, the Cardinals decal is shinier.
Well, and it's now 3D. So that was their big thing. So it's like a larger enhanced 3D, so you get some different shading, which makes the back end pop out almost like it's coming out of the helmet. And then they added the silver flakes in the helmet, which is a big thing. You know, it's funny, people don't get this, but I have high school kids, I have I have kids in youth football. The helmet thing, the jersey thing, all of it matters. It legitimately matters to them.
It really does. I've heard about college kids.
Yeah, they love it.
And they make decisions about where they go to school for football on the jersey alone sometimes.
Right. And you know, if they're fortunate enough to have that choice, like, and so like, that's the thing, as you look at it, I think they did a really nice job of like giving people options. That's why I said not everybody's gonna want like all three or love all three, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But like, you know, going in, looking at them on all three, they're clean. They look clean, and that's a big thing. So, you know, I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see how it all, you know, plays out as we get through there. But you know, it's a definite upgrade. That's all you can really, that's the biggest thing you can say over anything else, right?
And at least one thing there's one more thing we don't have to listen to fans about reading in the on the press conference chats, on Reddit, on Twitter. Nobody should be asking for new uniforms, at least for another decade. And who knows if we're still in the business then? So we won't have to deal with asking those questions or anything like that. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to the draft preview start part of the show, where we're starting with the running back position. We've got three positions: running back, tight end, and quarterback. We're going to go from most significant need to down to the least significant. So we'll start by talking about the running backs. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's our Cardinals talk on the web. We're at the draft preview part of our show. This is the fourth one of our positional previews. Coming up, we'll have next week, we'll have our mock draft before the draft itself. Let's talk about the running backs. There are the one running back to rule them all, we know, is Bijan Robinson out of Texas, who is also an Arizona high school product, that's cool. Cardinals will not be, I don't think. That's the one thing we have. There's been a lot of players connected to the Cardinals. Bijan Robinson is not one of them. But where do you think Bijan ultimately is going to get drafted? And then number two, will he be the only running back to go in round one?
Yeah, I think to answer your second question first, yes, I think he will be. He is one of the best running back prospects we've seen in the last forever. I've been fortunate enough. I mean, I know you live here, but you know, I was covering high school football when he was playing high school football. And he and Kelee Ringo are two of literally the best players I've ever seen on the field at any level. Bijan has grown roughly like an inch and like 10 pounds. since he left high school. Like,
and when didn't he play corner at a really high level as well in high school?
Yeah, he played both ways. So that was the thing, is like, he was just such a talent. And like, what's crazy about him is you go through it, and one of the things Justin and I talk about all the time with the podcast is like, you look at their yards per attempt, and like, if they're going to be like generational, they should be averaging over 6 yards per carry. And Bijan was 8.1, 5.8, and then in his most usage ever, 6.1. So it was like all this kid did was run for 6 yards, you know, over 6 yards per carry for his career, get better every season, started being able to hang on, or started to be able to catch the ball more consistently out of the backfield, you know. He's just a dynamic player. If the Cardinals were in a different situation, like trading back and taking him at 7 or 11 would make a lot of sense, but they just have so many needs that you look at a guy like Bijan, he's fantastic, but taking him in the first round would kind of be irresponsible team building.
Yeah.
In that sense.
Do you think, though, I see on ESPN, I hear things, and what you guys have said on the podcast is a little different. Generational talent. Is he on the same level as guys like Derrick Henry, Adrian Peterson, Saquon, a healthy Saquon, and more recently Jonathan Taylor? He doesn't have the long speed that either Taylor or Saquon had.
No, I think he's actually more in line with like a Zeke Elliott. And Zeke went fourth overall, as we know, and then, and you know, was a two-time, three-time All-Pro, you know, led the league in rushing a couple times. I mean, he was just a man amongst boys until, you know, it catches up to you. So it's one of those situations where you look at it and you just kind of figure out, I mean, think about Zeke's rookie year. He had over 1,600 yards rushing. And remember, that's back when there was only 16 games. So, and he only played in 15, by the way. So, you know, 1,600 yards rushing, 15 touchdowns. You look at his yards from scrimmage, his first 5 years, I think it is. Yeah. Zeke had 1,900 yards, 1,200 yards in 10 games, over 2,000 yards, 1,700 yards, and then over 1,300 yards in 15 games. Like, he was just a bell cow and a complete, you know, force. The question in the whole thing with running backs becomes, you know, what is their longevity? It's something you and I've talked about on the show, right? Like, draft running backs every couple of years, use them for 4 years, and then draft
and let
ones.
Someone else pay him. Right. As bad as that sounds, let another team pay that back. David Johnson, right, after he got paid, we've seen it basically every single running back, even Christian McCaffrey, after he got paid, still producing at a super high level, but the durability has been a concern. It's just when he plays, he's great,
right?
But he does miss a lot of time.
And even Zeke, I mean, Zeke got paid, and then he, you know, you look at after he got paid, you know, he had one 1,000 yard season again, and it's just like the amount of touches that they get, it just becomes really difficult. I, you know, I've said the big thing with Robinson, and the reason he is so great, what makes him so special, is obviously the balance, the running ability and things like that, but he doesn't take big hits. Like, if you watch him, he's able to, you know, kind of soften the blow when he's running. And that's why I think for the first contract, you know, for what the team like the Eagles or the Falcons that we're hearing might take him, you know, in the top 10, it makes sense, because like, you're going to get 5 great years out of him, and then you're going to have to make a decision and be cautious with it. But if you're close, especially like the Eagles, right, and you get a guy that can be a straight up bell cow, be on the field all 3 downs, do everything in the game, be a guy similar to, like you're saying, like a Derek, like obviously not stylistically, but be a guy like Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Jonathan Taylor, Zeke Elliott, like be one of those guys, which he has that ability, then you take it and you ride it, like I said, for 5 years. And then after 5 years, you got to make a decision, you know, but in those 5 years, you're going to see excellence and greatness.
Yeah. Going on, are there any running backs worth looking at in round 2?
You know, it's interesting because I love Jahmyr Gibbs. He's running back 2 with a bullet. Like, he's fantastic.
He's the one back that I've heard anything like mock draft, anything connected to the Cardinals that early.
Right. And the problem with Jahmyr Gibbs is he's a little small. 5'9", you know, we'll call it 200, 199, 200. It literally doesn't make a difference.
Which is basically Chase Edmonds size.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, and his high-end comp is so high. It's one of those things that you don't even like to talk about because it's almost unrealistic to expect him to get there.
That's what Kaim said about Chase Edmonds, like his physical comp. They wouldn't even say who it was.
Right. And so his is Jamal Charles.
Oh my gosh.
and it's crazy to look at. So like you look at Gibbs, right? Charles was an inch and a half taller, but like 5'11", 200 pounds. But you look at some similarities, you know, arm length for Gibbs, 30 and a half. Arm length for Charles was 31 and a half. Hand size 9 1/8, hand size 9 1/4. 4.436 for Gibbs, 4.38 for Charles. And then their verticals, you look at, you're like, that's not impressive. Charles' vertical was 30 and a half, which is not good for running backs. Gibbs was 33 and a half, which is, you know, below average in running backs, but it's their explosiveness and ability to put their foot in the ground and change directions. But that's what I said. That's his high end. I think he's more realistically, and again, this is still super high end, and this guy went in the second round, and we have to like remember the player and not the person, and that's Ray Rice. So Ray Rice came out of Rutgers, you know, he came out at 5'8", 199. Holy cow, that's almost the same, right? He ran a 4.42, so a little slower, 31.5-inch vert, a little less. So you look at it, you know, he was
really good.
And he was fantastic until the off-the-field stuff.
Right, you know. Don't go punching people in an elevator.
Right. Well, people or especially ladies.
Yeah.
So we know that, I mean, I shouldn't say we know, but we've never heard anything negative about Gibbs in that way. So, you know, if that's his likely outcome, his high end is, you know, Jamal Charles, who was a borderline Hall of Famer. And then his low end is a guy that you look at and you're like, oh, this guy, you know, he wasn't bad. He was a good back, you know, but he was a little undersized and never, and by the way, drafted way too early. So he just never lived up to the hype. But like a Felix Jones, you remember Jones in Dallas?
Yes.
And, you know, just never, and again, drafted in the first round, 22nd overall, shouldn't have been. And then just never really lived up to the hype. Had one really nice season his second year as the like lead backup, averaged almost 6 yards a carry. And then once they asked him to start kind of being the guy, he wasn't able to do it consistently. But, and so that's the thing. I think Gibbs is foolproof. But again, can you risk 34 on him? Now, right.
Especially when there's other positions that don't, let's be honest. I think the running back position is, while like great players, not so many. But I think throughout, especially at the running back position, you can get productive players throughout. While after round two, your offensive line talent diminishes greatly.
Correct. And I think that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, you look at it, that this draft really tells that story, you know, and so we can play the what if game, right? What if they trade back and they end up with a, you know, another second pick? I would still prefer to see them use it on what we call premium positions, right?
Correct.
Like either a pass rusher if they didn't draft one in the first round, or a corner, or an offensive lineman, right? Like, yes, one of those three. But, you know, Gibbs is a guy that you wouldn't
hate.
Right. I wouldn't hate.
The third round, and, though, is kind of where, for me, it looks like the sweet spot, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of interesting guys. I mean, and it really becomes a pick your flavor,
yeah,
type of thing. There's, and that's what makes it.
The three guys, the three or four guys, names that really pop for me. Zach Charbonnet, I know he's a guy that Justin really likes over there on your show. Who's the other? Kendra Miller, TCU, Dwayne McBride, UAB. I don't know if he'll go as high as round three, but could. And then, yeah, and then the talk of all the offseason, the combine and the Senior Bowl was Tyjae Spears.
Right. And so you look at a couple of the guys, so we'll start, you know, Charbonnet. I comped him, you know, to a guy that came out of ASU last year in Rashad White, right? Like a guy that was drafted in the third round, is going to get the chance to be a lead back this year. You know, you look at him, has everything you want, 6 foot, just under 6'1", 214 pounds, ran a 4.53, has good vertical, good broad jump, really, really solid all around.
Can catch athlete, the ball.
Catch, and that's what makes me recall Rashad White, right? Like, you know, and people thought Rashad was bigger, but he's literally the same size, 6 foot, 214. He was a little bit faster, 4.48, but like, you know, they're really, I think they're very similar players, and you can utilize him in the same way. You know, Kendra Miller is an interesting one because you're talking probably, I would guess, and again, we won't know until draft night, if there's a run on running backs, but I would guess you would take him closer to like 96,
right?
In that range, as well as Dwayne McBride. I think both those guys are really good players. Miller's an interesting one because, you know, obviously with the injury, we didn't get any testing numbers, right? So you're really going off of
just on tape, really.
Yeah, you're really going off the tape. You know, he came in 5'11", 215. That's exactly where you want him to be as a guy that's, you know, a really between the tackles type of guy. And, you know, he was the complimentary guy to Zach Evans, who's a guy I really like, but then came this year and he got the bulk of the carries. And again, one of the things that we talk about a lot is that's 6 yards per carry, right? He was at 7.3 again as a cup, 7.3 and then 7.5. This year is the main guy, 6.2. Exactly what you want to see, the growth. Doesn't catch the ball a lot out of the backfield. So that's one of the things that I would say you would have to see if he can do. I'm never going to say guys can't do it just because they weren't asked to do
right.
it.
Right. That's the one thing is like, can they? Because, right, that's one thing they said about Jonathan Taylor, right? And
right.
His hands are fine.
Right. And a guy he reminds me of, and that's not a special athlete. So, you know, when you don't get testing numbers, you got to be really careful when you go into comps with guys because you don't want to overcomp somebody. You don't want to be like, oh, you know, this guy is the next, you know, high-end guy, and then you quote some great testing numbers, but this guy's really like a, you know, low 4.5 or high 4.5, low 4.6 type of guy, right? And so, and I don't mean this to come off as negative. I think this guy's a really good back, but he reminds me a lot of like Tyler Allgeier coming out last year. And you and I both liked Allgeier a lot coming out of BYU.
Right, but no one was going to draft him before, but no one's drafted him before day three.
Right. And so if you can get, and so if you can get Miller, you know, at that 96 pick, that would be, you know, that would be a fit. You know, was McBride hurt as well? Do you know?
I don't remember that. I know that he probably didn't want to be tested because he is an analytical workhorse, but he doesn't do anything particularly flashy other than just produce. From what I let me see.
Yeah, he did not participate in pro day. Oh, okay. He did have a hamstring injury. Okay, so at least we got that. So again, he's a bigger guy. I mean, weight wise, he's the same. You know, 215, but he came in at 6'2", right?
No, 5'10". Or
5'10". Oh, this is wrong. Perfect. Yeah. So 5'10" and a fourth. Okay, and then he came in at 209. I wonder who they have there. That's the wrong stuff. But you look at him, you know, I really like him a lot. Like you said, the question with McBride is going to be where, because he's a guy that's run the ball probably about 9,000 times already.
Yes.
I'm exaggerating, but he's had over 400 carries the last 2 years.
You know, if I take someone, without knowing the testing, that's kind of Stephon Taylor like, right? He was an absolute workhorse at right. Stanford.
And so, you know, McBride comps out well to like guys like, you know, Spencer Ware, who had a nice career, Tashard Choice, who had a nice career. So it'll be interesting. He's another guy that you're just going to have to find out if he can catch the ball. I mean, he has 5 career catches.
And he was never asked to do it.
No. So. And so, again, we're just stating a fact. You know, we're saying, like, you got to find out if it's something he can do. But he can run in a zone or a man scheme, which is really nice. You know, nowadays more than any in the spread offenses, you got to find guys, you know, you have to find guys that do well at each. And so, you know, he's a guy that does that. And so I like him. A couple, you mentioned Tyjae Spears. One of the big knocks on him, if you will, is just going to be obviously the size, but it's the fact that he's been nicked up throughout his career.
And running back is a position where it's really easy.
Right. And so, like, you look at it, this was the first year over 200 carries. Again, averaged almost 7 yards per carry for his career, and he put up massive numbers. You know, one of the comps you get for him that I like is Justice Hill, the guy in Baltimore, who's been a great, you know, change of pace back, a great third down back, you know, a guy that can do a lot of different things, you know, out of the backfield for the Ravens. And he was a guy that, you know, he got drafted in the fourth round, which is, you know, again, what we're talking about, you know, that 96 to, I think it's 104, 105, whatever it is, the Cardinals, that would be a fit for them because he is a two-way player, right? Like he's a super, super athlete. He did not run the 40, I don't think, but he did everything else and he tested out extremely well. A couple of day three guys I really like that I think are really, really intriguing. The first one is Sean Tucker out of Syracuse. This dude is lightning fast. And so I'm excited to see where he goes, because he's a guy that allegedly was like a mid to low 4.3 guy. So you're talking about a guy that's a one cut downhill runner. The problem with these guys,
did he do it, or is this an estimated one? 4.54.
No, I have not seen that he did anything yet, because he was going to test in, he's going to have his pro day on April 24th.
Oh, jeez.
So, because he just got cleared. So this is, yeah. So this is the problem with these guys. So, like, and it explains the comp really well. So fast and athletic, but they're also, like, kind of. So what we talked about with Bijan, right? He's got all the tools in the toolbox, but then he's also really good at not taking big hits. Sean Tucker's not. And so you get like a guy like a Raheem Mostert, right, who's fast as can be, but can't stay on the field. But if you're talking about, you know, a guy in the fourth, fifth round, I like quite a bit in that range. Mostert, I think, went undrafted.
It was either undrafted or seventh round,
but you know, he's carved out a really nice niche for himself and been a really good back. But again, you're just talking about a guy that's, you know, again, you're going to have to put up with, you know, him missing 3, 4, 5 games a year. Just go ahead.
Now, I was going to ask a couple of guys that I think might be in at least one of them in the third round range is Tank Bigsby. He's one of the guys that the Cardinals actually brought in, Auburn. And then in the Kiper McShay mock draft that came out this week, it's the other Texas back, Roschon Johnson.
Yeah, Roshan's an interesting one.
He's a big dude.
He's huge. I get, you know, that's
6'2", 219. So yeah, he's kind of like the Keontae Ingram and James Conner mold.
Right, and he, you know, he never got a ton of run, obviously, because he was behind Bijan Robinson, who was a borderline, you know, Heisman type of guy. So you just look at Roschon. He's a guy that is a power guy, right? He's a between the tackle guy. He does a really nice job getting that extra yard. He actually comps out fairly similar to like James Conner. And so, like, he's obviously, Conner came in at 233. So he's a different beast altogether, but, you know, similar in terms of style and work, you know, when you play with Bijan, you don't really get to catch the ball either. Right. So like, He did catch. He did have 14 catches this year. So, you know, it's something he does well. But I think his early usage will be as a short yardage guy, you know, like that. He is a.
And that would target him more towards like where the Cardinals got Ingram, right? So six this round.
You know, I've heard that teams are going to like him in the third or fourth.
That's what like the Kiper McShay one had. That's really interesting, especially doesn't have the traits. Because where did Kenyon Drake get drafted? I don't remember, but because he kind of had the same type of situation being the backup there at Alabama, but he at least had different traits in the fact that he was a burner speed wise.
Third round, so he went 73 overall.
I remember you guys talking about Drake on the old Draft Breakdown podcast,
right? And it's one of those things like you gotta like. They're good players. You just have to be really careful when you take a backup because you don't know how they hold up to, you know, running the ball or getting all the carries. When they're able to be spared, so to speak, you know, it makes it more difficult. Bigsby's a guy, you know, he came in just a shade under 6 foot, but he's 210 pounds. So, you know, great size. Testing numbers were average across the board, which for a running back is fine. I think that's one of the big things now is that people get caught up in like these athletic testing for running backs where it's like, look, their vision and an ability to like get in.
And there's a reason why running backs tend to be slightly less athletic than other positions.
Right. Exactly.
It's not a premium position. And so you're better athletes. You get put at receiver and corner. And then the defensive backfield to be able to do that. When a running back, yeah, sure, if you can run the ball fast, but there's other things to do that. But that's probably one of the reasons why those type of numbers are average.
Right, exactly. And so you look at him, you know, he's a guy that's going to, again, is great at getting one cut and getting up the field, something he does really well. Again, another guy that thrives between the tackles, does it consistently and is able to win. You know, he's one of the guys that runs best out of the zone or, you know, zone blocking. So that's one of the things that'll be interesting, again, to see how that plays into things for him. He's a guy that – so when we talk about the 6 yards per carry, one of the things that I want to specify is like, it doesn't mean don't draft somebody if they're under 6 yards per carry. It just means that like, if you're going to spend a top 50-ish, let's just say top 2 round pick on a guy, they should be over that because they should be good enough to have created. Bigsby's at 5.5, which is fine. It really is fine for the garbage he was playing with at Auburn those couple years. You know, they just weren't the old Auburn, right? I mean, hell, they brought in Cadillac Williams to coach the team. Like, like it was not good. You know, his 3 years, he had 3 coaches there. So Bigsby's a guy, you know, I think he's going to be good. The question with Bigsby and you know, the question with a lot of these running backs is like, can they get their work in without the buildup? That's one of the things we've seen with James Conner, right? Is like Conner and Roschon Johnson's the same way. And Bigsby's kind of the same way. And that goes with their size, right? They're guys that need 20 carries to get to 80 yards, if that makes sense. Like, because their first 12 or 15,
they're gonna get two yards, yeah, 3 yards, and then you're gonna get the 15 on like carry number 12 and 13,
right? And that's so there are guys, and I would even say I would guess Kendre Miller is similar to that. So that's the question with these guys. Are you getting a guy that needs too much, you know, too many carries to be effective early? Because like you said, if you're taking them in the third, especially at like what, 64, whatever, 66, you know, they better be guys that can come in and contribute immediately. Whereas if you're taking them a little later, you know, 96 or potentially on day three, then that's kind of what you're more looking for, right? Is a guy that can eventually replace your main guy. But this is a great class to need a running back because there's just so many different types to choose from. One late round guy that I really want to at least throw his name out there, Evan Hull. You know, I talked to Justin about him and I was like, you know, why did he come out? He still had a year of eligibility. And Justin's like, well, when you play for Northwestern and you go up and down, like they do every year, you just kind of, you know, once you're graduated, go ahead and get out of it because you're going to be worn down. And Hull is a really good two-way back. He had 54 receptions this year, 33 last year. So he's a guy that catches the ball out of the backfield really nicely. You know, he tested out really,
right,
really well. So when you look at Evan Hull, you know, he's a guy at 5'10", 210, ran a 4.47, great jumps, really good three cone. So, like, he's a guy that you can come in and you can get some really nice, you know, kind of as a change of pace back, and a guy that has shown he doesn't need, you know, 25 carries to get the most out of him, especially as a guy with the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. He reminds me of a guy that was in Tennessee. I just want to make sure, but Darrington Evans, I believe he's the backup in Tennessee.
I remember.
Yeah. Yes, he was. Okay.
Did he go to Northwestern too?
Appalachian State.
Oh, that's
and he
that's
went.
One.
Yeah, and he went in the third round. So he went a little earlier than Hull probably will, but like a nice receiving back, some good elite. I like him. But with Hull, you're probably talking like round five, maybe even six, which is, you know, again, with the needs the Cardinals have, a Bijan or a Gibbs would be fantastic, but I just don't know if you can allot that right now.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's talk about a pretty decent tight end class. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. The tight end position is an interesting one for the Cardinals because they got Zach Ertz and they used a second round pick on
Trey McBride.
Oh my gosh, I totally blanked on his name. And so you don't feel like tight end is going to be a priority or one that they would necessarily target. And like I've seen a couple of times where a tight end is mocked to him in the second round. I'm like, I don't know if they're going to do that. That said, the tight end class is pretty decent, and I know Daniel Jeremiah during the combine said when they were doing their workouts that he thought as many as four could be drafted in the first round. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe two.
A couple of these guys came back down to earth after Jeremiah really pumped them up. But you know, you've got the top two guys. Michael Mayer is number one with the bullet. I've said all along, he reminds me a lot of Jason Witten, right?
Yeah, like, and just, there's nothing he does spectacularly, but he does everything well.
Right, and so, you know, and obviously right now he's fast enough. He's not Jason Witten at the end of his career, you know, but...
Well, and it's important, especially for those that are kind of poo-pooing, like, some of the, like, his skill set. He entered Notre Dame as the guy, as a freshman, right?
Right, and all he did was put up numbers with bad quarterbacks for three straight years. I mean, think about this. The dude that had, as a freshman, like you said, 450 yards on 42 catches. And then as a sophomore, had 840 yards on 71 catches with seven touchdowns. And then last year, when everybody knew he was their only offensive weapon, he had 809 yards on 67 catches, over 12 yards per catch, and 9 touchdowns. Like, he's just a guy that understands how to get open. He understands how to play the position. He's fantastic. If he was there at 34, like, you could tell me that they drafted him, I'd be like, that's a they drafted a great football player. Like, yeah. I'm not going to be mad about it, but I don't think he gets past the Bengals. That'd be the latest I could see him go. But yeah, he's number one with a bullet. Dalton Kincaid's a guy that a lot of people like.
A lot of people like him more than Mayer.
Right. So he's a guy, I think he's a little older, which, you know, is fine. He's a little smaller. We don't have testing numbers because he's got a bad back. And so that's my first thing.
That's like, great.
Yeah. So he's sub 6'4", but he came in at 246, which is fine. Short arms, but big hands. So, and he's a move tight end more. He kind of is in the mold of Trey. Like
Trey, and the comp that a lot of people have said is kind of like a younger Zach Ertz.
Dude, and I've seen that. Ertz came in at 6'5", so he was almost 2 inches taller.
Well, maybe that's more like skill.
Stylistically.
Style, yeah.
And I understand that, but like it's hard to make up for size, right? Like that's why we like Trey, and so it's not a negative in any way, you know. And Trey came in about the same size, under 6'4", 246 pounds. Arm length isn't great, but big hands, and he catches the ball well. And so that's the thing. He's a move piece. Here's the thing. I don't think you can have two of those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need somebody that is an ultra competitive and aggressive blocker, and that's not Kincaid's forte. It's not what Trey does best either. So,
Steve Keim views him as a Max Williams type player, which is interesting.
Yeah, and he could be eventually, but you know, in his first year, it wasn't his strong point. In fact, there were so many
blocking miscues.
Yeah, which is fine. Again, rookies, and also understand your player's strengths. Like, that wasn't, and to be fair, they weren't planning on having to use him, but between Max and Zach both getting hurt, then all of a sudden he's got to play a ton of snaps, right?
Better option than Steven Anderson.
Right, 100%. My favorite tight end in this class, a guy I love, and it's super easy to compare him to, you know, his cohorts from Iowa, but Sam Laporta. I just love this kid. If he was if they can trade back, address, you know, something at 7 or 11, whatever, and then add an extra second round pick, and you get two guys with that pick in the third round at 66. If you took Sam Laporta, you know, again, a little bit smaller, but he comes from Iowa, so you know this kid has to block, right? Like, that's what they do at Iowa.
Well, and you think about this way, George Kittle, didn't produce anything in college, really.
Right. And so, and you look at what Laporta had to deal with at quarterback. He's a hard worker. He's an uber athlete, 4.59 40, great jumps, great three cone and short shuttle. I love the kid. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. Like I said, you could talk me into him. And then from there, you know, it just becomes like, who do you like in certain rounds? Where do you like guys, and what are you looking for? You know, we talked about the top guys. Luke Musgrave, I'm interested to see where he goes. You know, he's a guy that is another kind of – he's a bigger guy. He's, you know, 6'6", 253, but he plays, to me, similar to like a Cole Kmet coming out of Notre Dame, and Kmet went pretty early, didn't he?
I think he was in round two, right. Didn't he?
Yeah, and so I could see Musgrave going in round two. Yeah, good callback, Jess. He went round two, and he's turned into a really, really solid receiving option for the Bears. You know, I like Musgrave, but, you know, I don't think that's – I'm ready to make a play that early. Obviously, Darnell Washington.
Super giant, hell of a locker with some upside with his hands. Like, he might have the, like, if you're looking at tight end value, depending where he goes, he just didn't get used as a receiver in Georgia because he just blocked so well.
Right. And that's the thing is like you get comps like Brandon Pettigrew, who was a guy that was in the league forever as a blocking tight end. Mercedes Lewis, same thing, right? If you get a guy like that, then that's fantastic. You know, he's a freak on top of that, you know, obviously size, we know, almost 6'7", 264 pounds.
Arms and hands. Holy cow. Yeah, 11-inch hands.
Yes, 83 and almost 84-inch wingspan and 11-inch hands. But he ran a 4.64 40 and had 122-inch broad jump, which is the 86th percentile. Like, and then he had a 4.08 short shuttle, which is 97th percentile. Like, this is a dude that can move.
And but the sled, the blocking drill that they did at the combine, it was like pushing. It was like hot butter. The leverage that he, like, as big as he is, the leverage he was able to get and just move that sled with no problem at all.
Yeah, and so that's the biggest thing is, like, if you can get him at 66, that's a great value. I don't know if it's a great value because you're talking about basically, and this is not a negative. I don't want anybody to think of this as a negative, but you're basically being like, hey, we're running, you know, a three tackle set on almost every play. You know, so and so, by the way, if they're going to mimic some of the things Tennessee and Cleveland did, that's something that they did there, right? Like, that's something that they have good blocking tight ends. So it'll be something that's important to see them out there. So, you know, he's obviously the name of like the best blocking tight end, but there are other guys that are good blockers that could be had on day three. And you know, day three is where it would start to make a lot of sense, right?
The kind of the guy that would be really fun to get in day three is the kid out of Old Dominion, Zach Kuntz.
Yeah. So Zach Kuntz was a Penn State guy, and then transferred to Old Dominion. And he's a unique guy because you really just don't see guys this big move like this. So we talked about Blake Freeland the other day, the BYU tackle, right? Kuntz is basically that guy as a tight end, just a shade under 6'7", but 255 pounds, good arm length, 34 inch, ran a 4.55 40 with a 40 inch vertical and a 128 inch broad jump.
6.87 3 cone. Holy
yeah, crap. And then his 3 cone and short shuttle were elite. And then you got to remember too, like those long arms, he put up 23 reps on the bench. So like, but so this is what I want people to understand about his jumps though. His jumps comparative to all athletes. His vertical's in the 95th percentile, his broad jump's in the 93rd percentile, and then, like you said, his shuttle time's in the 86th percentile. So this is a guy that is a freak athlete. Here's the thing. He's a good run blocker, obviously a matchup nightmare at 6'7". He's a developmental guy, and the reason why is because he didn't dominate at Old Dominion like you would hope. Last year, he had a really solid year, 73 receptions, 692 yards, a little less than you would want, you know, 10 yards per catch with 5 touchdowns. This year, he was on pace to do a lot better, 12 receptions for 144 yards and 2 touchdowns, 12 yards per catch, and then he got hurt. So, so he only played 5 games. So you look at it, he's a guy that, and Old Dominion is D1, it's not FCS anymore, so you worry about, you're drafting for traits specifically. And that's why, you know, in round 4 or 5, you take a guy with these traits, with this frame, with his size, and he is a good blocker. Like that's a thing. He's a good blocker. He's just not overly physical when it comes to catching the football, which is disappointing. He's kind of baby birdish right now, where like, somebody hits him low and he goes down. He doesn't understand how to run through contact yet, despite being bigger, faster, and stronger than everybody he goes against. But if you trust your coaches, and you have tight ends in house, which the Cardinals do, then maybe you can wait on him and get him, like I said, on day three, and you bring him in. He's a guy that I think would be a great, like you said, a great developmental, a great traits-based pick.
Especially if he can play special teams.
Right, which you would assume with those athletic testing numbers he would be able to do. The question it comes down to is just about him, his desire of physicality. And it's not that he's soft or anything like that, but the reality is he just doesn't understand how to use his physical tools yet like he should. Like a guy that's that size should be able to physically dominate, and he just isn't there yet.
Who else is there worth looking at on day three?
After Kuntz, it gets a little less interesting. Josh Wiley's a guy out of Cincinnati that is a very solid blocking tight end. You know, obviously after that team kind of came apart, he wasn't utilized nearly as much in the passing game or as effective in the passing game. So you look at his numbers in 2020 and 2021 playing with Desmond Ridder, obviously he put up over 12 yards per reception this year and 6 touchdowns in each season. Only 330 yards, 350 yards in those 2 seasons, but that's fine. I mean, you're talking about a fourth option, right? You're not talking about a one or a two like Mayer or those guys. But this year he dropped down 326, which was fine, but he had a career high in catches in 32, but he only had 3 touchdowns. So he's a guy that just, you look at the frame, he's just under 6'7", but he's a little leaner, 250, had good times, decent jumps, you know, average jumps, which are fine for a tight end, but he's a good blocker. The question becomes on him. He's lean, like I said, 6'7", 250, so he's built more like a small forward than a power forward right now. But he has really, really short arms, like 31.5-inch arms. And at 6'7", you do wonder if that's going to be an issue as an inline tight end being asked to block
his wingspan. Like, he's almost 6'7", and his wingspan is, 6'4", like 6'5".
Yeah, so that you do wonder if that could be an issue. But that's why, again, if you take him on day three, and he's more of a fifth or sixth round guy,
right?
But he can block. Like, that's the thing, is he has shown on film he can block. Guys we talked about earlier, especially like a Kincaid, they're not blockers. A Kuntz is a willing blocker. He's not a great blocker right now. Even guys that like a Luke Musgrave, or even Sam Laporta aren't as physical blockers as Wiley. But I genuinely do wonder about the arm length.
What about Tucker Kraft? He's a guy that we just
heard
that he was one of their top 30s.
Yeah, and I've heard that he's going to go in the second or third round. Which,
oh, wow.
You know, to me, that's I wouldn't be interested.
Oh.
And I like him quite a bit. I think he's a really intriguing prospect. Another guy that I think he got injured this year. Double-checking my notes here. Yeah, he didn't play much this year at South Dakota State, who actually, I believe, won the FCS championship this year, if I remember right. And they do a really good job of producing tight ends. Obviously Dallas Goedert coming out of there as well. He's a really intriguing guy. Kraft came in at 6'5", 254, 4'6", 940, really good broad jump, good 3 cone and short shuttle, good on the bench. Like, basically he checks all the boxes. And then you look at his production as a sophomore. He put up 770 yards and 6 touchdowns. This year he was on pace again to be have a better season in half the snaps. He put up 27 catches for 348 yards. So he's averaging almost 13 yards per catch and 3 touchdowns, but he just, got hurt. And that's a tough thing coming out of a small school, making the jump as an underclassman from the small schools, ballsy too, right? Like, you didn't play a ton. So it'll be interesting, but he's a good willing blocker. He just needs to get a little more savvy with what he's doing, but he's a guy I'm not interested in my first, you know, obviously,
right,
first 66 picks. Like, obviously the Cardinals don't have first 66, but you know, 66 or less. Like, I even if you have multiple second round picks, I Kraft is not a guy that I would take. Now, well,
it's a premium packs with the round 10, round 2. You have to feel like you get them, one, because of the importance of the position, and two, just the talent in the class.
Right. And so, you know, and let me say this, if they were to draft Tucker Kraft in the second round, I'm not going to complain at all. But I'm just saying that wouldn't be what I would do. But I think he does have upside. I think he does have ability. And I think he is a very good player, you know, that offers a lot and would fill an immediate need for the Cardinals based on, you know, when Zach Ertz is going to be back.
Come to next on the Rise Up Series podcast with Sarah Cardinals Talk on the web. The final position we're going to discuss, it is the quarterback position. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best of our Cardinals Talk on the web. Quarterback position is one we won't go. This is going to be more of the deep dive because the top five quarterbacks that both you and Justin have, so Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, and even Hendon Hooker, none of those are even guys that the Cardinals even consider. They're not in that position. They have committed to Kyler Murray. There's no reason to even discuss them. Those are guys that are going to be drafted. You know, four of those are going in the first round. It might go in the top 10, or according to some mock drafts, we're going the top five. Hooker is going to go somewhere round one, round two. It's everything after that, and honestly, let's be honest, the Cardinals shouldn't touch the quarterback position before day three, and likely late day three. Like, they don't have a seventh-round pick, but sure, a compensatory. Like, if you're looking to develop someone, that's kind of what you want to do. But the name that came up, and I don't know, maybe this was just agent talk, the Cardinals like Stanford's Tanner McKee, which I've seen him. Okay, I will say this, that he ranks like on the mock draft simulations I run, he's always kind of at the top of the big board around round three. And I don't want to draft a quarterback at that point, right?
Yeah, that's how I am. You know, and we've seen McKee mocked as high as like early second. I don't think the Cardinals take a quarterback until day three.
Right. It doesn't make any sense at all.
If McKee is the guy on day three, that's fine. He's still a little – it's still a little interesting when you're talking about a guy that's basically a statue in the pocket.
Right. Like, he's a throwback, like, he's not doing anything. Like, he's got heavy feet, and his passing production. You know, if you look at kind of the numbers in the Pac-12, it's kind of pedestrian, right?
Yeah, very pedestrian. You know, turns the ball over a lot, which is interesting. And then he takes a ton of sacks, which is, you know, again, really interesting when you're talking about a quarterback that, you know, to back up your quarterback who's very athletic with an offensive line that may not be very good in year one, right?
he reminds me physically of, say, like throwback Andrew Walter, but without the production.
Yeah, and so you look at it, he's a guy that, you know, has, like you said, his production is not great. He, you know, and people might say, well, what do you mean? You know, he only threw seven interceptions his sophomore year, and then eight this year's junior year. But it's like, yeah, but he only threw 15 touchdowns his sophomore year and 13 this year. And I get it, Stanford's bad. Like, they were bad. It is what it is. But it's tough to separate a player when he's the guy trying to drive the engine, drive the car in that, so to speak. So, you know, I don't understand it at all. But like you said, maybe it's agent speak. Who knows what it boils down to? But it's an interesting fit nonetheless.
Who are the quarterbacks worth taking? I think the one that has a lot of fans super intrigued is DTR out of UCLA, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, because of the combination of athletic traits that he has. And especially in the NFL, we're having a two-way quarterback, a dual-threat quarterback. There's about, even if, you know, if you look at some of the numbers, that maybe a running quarterback isn't great because they get hurt so often, but having that dual threat, that at least the ability to make plays with their legs is very cool.
Yeah, and I love DTR. I think he'd be a great fit as a long-term backup. Interesting because he definitely bulked up during
the off-season. What was his playing weight?
So I think he plays in the 190s.
Yeah, he weighed 203 at the combine.
Right, and he was a guy, Justin and I joked about it right before the Senior Bowl, because he was at the Senior Bowl, and I said, I'm going to bet you that UCLA undersells his height because he looks so lean that I bet you he's taller than what he's listed at. And they had him listed at 6 foot, and he came in at 6'1.5".
Yeah.
And he was like one at the Senior Bowl. I want to say he was like 193. I could be wrong, but the player, love him. I think he's fantastic. I think he's got great poise. I think he's got fantastic experience. You know, he's not got all the tools, or you would be talking about a guy that would be, you know, picked earlier. But the reality is he's accurate. He grew as a passer, especially under Chip Kelly the last couple of years. You know, he was a guy that came in and really was a lot was expected. He was a 5-star recruit, and then he didn't take off and got there and really developed him. He's a 5th-year guy, which, you know, again, that's, I guess, not the knock it used to be, right? Because
you're going to have, like, it's going to take a couple more years before you can really ignore the age. Well, not ignore.
Yeah.
The
and
age,
sorry. So is. Right. So I was looking. So yeah, he came in at 191 at the Senior Bowl.
Oh, interesting, because, you know, they had him listed on Sports Reference, 6'1", 205.
Yeah, so, like I told you, they would undersell him. But yeah, so, I mean, I love DTR. I think he would be a fantastic backup. He's a good fit. He's actually, you know, he comps out well to, like, a P.J. Walker athletically. But he kind of, I mean, he reminds me a lot of, like, of Cole. Right, like, he's lean, good arm, athletic.
You know, you don't remind me of, like, is actually Brett Hundley.
Yeah, I think he's a better. I think he'll be a better pro. Yeah. But yeah, you know, another guy I love, again, a day three guy. But I love him is Clayton Tune out of Houston. And then he came in and was a great athlete. That was what was fun, right? Came in at just under 6'3", 220 pounds, ran a 4.64 40, and then he had 37.5-inch vert and a 122-inch broad, and then ran a 6.89 3 cone, which was one of the faster times at the combine all
right,
around.
Right, right. Like, that's great. I don't know why you did that as a quarterback, but
you know who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
Josh McCown.
Yeah, that, and he stuck around forever.
Right, and great backup, you know, tough guy, good arm, you know, great mobility, great athleticism. Remember, I mean, McCown was the guy dunking at all the,
yeah,
you know.
Well, way back when, like, the Cardinals had him starting back in like 03-04, he was very athletic at the time.
And that's who Tune reminds me of. And so, you know, obviously we're talking about backup Josh McCown and not starter Josh McCown. But if you got him on day three, I think that would be a great fit because, again, you're talking about a long-term investment in the backup position. And I really do like him. You know, I don't know enough about the guy out of Shepherd to even like have a serious conversation. Typically when those guys show up at the Senior Bowl like that, they either play well or fizzle out. And I feel like he kind of fizzled when he was there.
Well, at the Senior Bowl, like I tried to, like the quarterback play was subpar,
bad.
Wasn't it? It was subpar at best. And I perhaps the more decorated name on here is Stetson Bennett, only Stetson Bennett did terrible things for himself in the offseason, right? Leading up to.
Yeah, has a guy ever not done anything but also hurt his draft stock more?
like he didn't do the Senior Bowl, and then what did he get? Getting arrested? Well, what was it that he did off these? I don't remember, but like leading up to it, I'm like, yeah, he was a quarterback of Georgia. But then nothing that happened in the offseason was a positive for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and he's like 26. I mean, he's a great athlete. I think he, you know, the easy comp's going to be like Doug Flutie, but it makes sense. You know, a guy that comes in, you know, rallies the troops for a game or two, and then, is back on the bench.
Oh, public intoxication. That's what happened.
Yeah. He's an interesting fellow. I like Stetson. I mean, I think he's a funny guy, but you know. And then Jake Haener was the other Senior Bowl, I believe, right? That had a good Senior Bowl. But he has an injury history, which is obviously a pause. You know, he comes in, he's smaller at 6 foot 207. You know, he and Jaren Hall are really intriguing to me, but like they're both clear backups, right? Like they're both guys that come in as backups immediately. The thing I like about Hall is that he plays with great athleticism and mobility, but his passing is it does leave something to be desired, which I mean why
and also you do have to worry about I recall, I don't watch a ton of BYU football, but I am aware of it, he had durability issues, right?
Yeah, so I think so. And you know, it's one of those situations, man. Like these guys all have flaws. That's why we're talking about them in third round as a backup. But like if you had me rank like the backup guys, DTR and Clayton Toon would be 1A and 1B. Like I don't care what you put them. They're two different players, but like I love both of them and what they would bring as long-term backups. And I would bring them in and then probably go Haener, McKee, and then all. And then Stetson Bennett's just a wild card. Like, I like him. I think he's a good player. But, like, and I mean this in the most positive way. Is he interested in coming in and being a backup quarterback in the NFL? I mean, this guy has basically lived the best life for the last, you know, 5 years. Well, technically just 2 years, but, you know, 5 years while he was at BYU. Like, do you think he's going to come in and just be content to hang out on the bench and play every once in a while? So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And with that, this actually wraps up our entire, because we're not going to talk about the specialist. That's for other people to talk about. Punters, kickers. Hey, you know, there's the Michigan kicker, and then after that, whatever. Was it Moody? Moody worth of draft pick, and who cares after
yeah.
that? There we just talked about the specialists. But that wraps up 4 shows of positional previews. Our next show will be next week. It'll drop on Wednesday. Seth and I will have our mock draft of the first round, and I think You know, I think we do a decent job most years. I think this year is going to be really hard to really gauge. So our picks may be a mess. with the movement there might be at the top of the draft. But that's coming next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rude. This is Rise Up Syria Podcast. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.